Welcome to the podcast for the Journal of the American Academy of Physician Assistants.
Welcome back, everyone, and happy spring. I'm excited for this month's podcast as we have another guest, actually two guests, and one of them you're familiar with. But before we get started, here's an overview of this month's podcast. This month, we will be reviewing the CME article on acute respiratory distress syndrome, and we will be reviewing two articles from last month's edition, where JAPA introduced a new article series titled Global Insights. The two articles we'll be reviewing discuss how the PA profession is becoming a worldwide phenomenon and insights on practicing as a PA in the UK. And lastly, here are some quick reminders. After listening to the podcast, go to cme.aapa.org and take the CME post-test. It's at the bottom of the page. When you score at least a 70%, you earn one Category 1 CME. And for our quick disclaimer, this podcast is a summary of selected articles from this month's edition. We share our take and opinions, which do not represent JAPA, the authors, the publisher, or the editor's opinions. This is not intended as medical advice. Now let's get into the podcast. Our CME article is titled Acute Respiratory Distress Syndrome by Kristen Powers. Kristen practices in pulmonary critical care at Carolinas Medical Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. The author has disclosed no potential conflicts of interest, financial or otherwise. Acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS, is a severe inflammatory-induced lung injury. Unfortunately, ARDS is the most common disorder found in the ICU and accounts for 10% of ICU admissions. This leads to a high utilization of hospital resources, as 23% of patients with ARDS require mechanical ventilation. And to highlight the severity even further, the in-hospital mortality rate due to ARDS is between 35 and 46%. Now, granted, these numbers are from 2014 and may be very different due to something we've all become familiar with over the last couple of years, COVID-19. As previously mentioned, ARDS is due to an inflammatory response after a pulmonary or extrapulmonary insult. Some common diseases that lead to the development of ARDS are pneumonia, which accounts for 35 to 50% of cases, sepsis, aspiration, trauma, transfusion, surgery, and in some cases, it can even be idiopathic. For pathophysiology, a main contributor of this inflammatory response is activated neutrophils. Once activated, they initiate an inflammatory cascade, which releases cytokines, procoagulant molecules, oxidants, proteases, and other toxic metabolites. All of these cause damage to lung endothelium and alveolar epithelium, making them more porous. Because they become more porous, there's less surface area for diffusion of oxygen and carbon dioxide, and thus gas exchange is inhibited. Additionally, proteins cross into the interstitial space from the vasculature, causing a disruption of hydrostatic and oncotic pressures within the alveoli. Just as a refresher, hydrostatic pressure is the pressure that is exerted by a fluid, while oncotic, or also known as colloid pressure, is the pulling force of proteins, also referred to as colloids, which attracts fluid or water. This means that there are now proteins and fluid in the interstitial space of the lung parenchyma, which is basically pulmonary edema, and this also reduces gas exchange and lung compliance. Endothelial damage can also cause pulmonary vasoconstriction, microvascular emboli, and pulmonary hypertension secondary to vascular remodeling. And of course, if severe enough, pulmonary hypertension can lead to CHF. For clinical manifestations, the most common sign of ARDS is hypoxemia. There are also three stages of ARDS. The first is the acute or exudative stage. This occurs from days 1 through 6 of the disease, and pulmonary edema is the hallmark presentation due to endothelial and epithelial damage. The second stage is the subacute stage, or the fibroproliferative stage. This occurs from day 7 to 14. At this point, pulmonary edema starts to improve, and epithelial repair begins with the utilization of collagen and fibroblasts, which can cause fibrosis. And speaking of which, the third stage is the chronic stage, or known as the fibrotic stage. This occurs after day 14, and at this point, infiltration of neutrophils dissipates, but there is still residual fibrosis secondary to the fibroproliferative stage. Now, there are a couple of other things to note. One, Unfortunately, not all patients progress to the fibrotic stage. And two, ARDS can resolve actually without any residual lung damage, despite going through the fibrotic stage. For diagnosis, ARDS is a clinical diagnosis and is commonly a diagnosis of exclusion, as the clinical findings are nonspecific. However, some diagnostic tests you can obtain are chest X-ray, which these findings may reveal bilateral opacifications, an ABG, which will reveal hypoxemia, and maybe even hypercapnia if severe enough. Of course, you would order a CBC and maybe inflammatory markers for a complete workup, but again, these findings are nonspecific. Commonly, the Berlin criteria is used to diagnose ARDS, which includes presentation of symptoms within 1 week of clinical insult, bilateral opacification on chest X-ray, symptoms that are not better explained to be cardiac in origin, and a PO2-FI2 ratio that is less than 300 millimeters of mercury, which, by the way, this ratio is used to also stage the severity of ARDS, which the article really does a good job explaining, so I recommend checking that out. For management, the mainstays are proning, mechanical ventilation, and supportive measures. Briefly, I want to talk about proning, as the article does a really wonderful job explaining proning and highlights some interesting information. Most of us have started using proning during the COVID-19 pandemic, and we may have never even heard of proning until the pandemic, let alone utilize this. However, several studies have been published about the effectiveness of proning years prior to the pandemic. And research has shown that 16 consecutive hours of proning can reduce the mortality rate of patients with severe ARDS. And this is suspected to be due to the increased ventilation, perfusion matching, and reduced gravity-dependent atelectasis. Some barriers to utilizing the prone position are its complexity and complications such as pressure ulcers, dependent edema, and the possibility of dislodgement of endotracheal and other invasive tubing. Management may also include the use of glucocorticoids such as dexamethasone, but this is usually reserved for those who require supplemental oxygen early in the disease course. Lastly, conservative use of IV fluids is crucial to prevent further pulmonary edema and is shown to reduce the number of ventilator days and length of stay in the ICU. For our next segment, we'll be reviewing two articles titled The PA Profession, a Worldwide Phenomenon, and Physician Associates in the UK, Development, Status, and Future. As previously mentioned, these two articles are part of a new article series titled Global Insights. Articles within the Global Insight series will describe the PA experience outside of the US. The first article in the series highlights the PA experience in the UK, which I have some very special guests today for this discussion, Dr. Adrian Banning and Professor Juanita Gardner. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Lena, thank you so much for having me here back. Really excited to be back on the JAPA podcast talking about this exciting topic.
Yeah, for our new listeners, Adrian was the previous host of the JAPA podcast and started the JAPA podcast. So
it's true. I'm so happy to be back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to include the both of you in this discussion because, one, Ms. Gardner, you practice as a PA in Scotland for several years, and Adrian currently hosting global classrooms for PA students here at Drexel. So I wanted to tap into that. Do you both mind just sharing a brief overview of your experiences with both of these?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I have been a PA since the 80s, and basically my experience has been outpatient primary care. However, in 2005, I was able to get the opportunity to travel and work for the National Health Service of Scotland in Edinburgh. And so my job there primarily was to set up some COPD and asthma clinics in a part of Edinburgh called Leith. And from there, I did some outpatient work as a primary care physician assistant. And then my last couple of years in Scotland, I worked as a team leader on the head, neck, and lung cancer team. So it was a great experience. I got to see the National Health Service system in full action and was able to compare it to our healthcare system here in the US and to see how PAs are utilized outside of the United States.
Juanita, I really wish I could have done that. For me, I haven't practiced abroad, although I'm still hoping to, if anyone listening wants to offer me a job. I mean, I have a job, but you know, You can still email me. My experience has been kind of watching from afar how this has evolved and speaking to my colleagues who are part of the PA profession internationally in Canada and in Ireland and in England. And like Lena said before, at Drexel University, we're launching a virtual initiative where we partner with international programs. Interprofessionally too, some nursing programs, but we've been really lucky to be able to work with the University of Ulster PA program in Northern Ireland. And so shout out to Helen Hardy, who's been our colleague there. It's been a really great experience to bring international partners into a global classroom virtually. So our American and the Northern Ireland students can compare and contrast their different experiences.
Now, Adrian, what encouraged you to kind of start implementing this? And what are you hoping students take away from this experience?
I will be really honest and say that Drexel has been leading the way in global classrooms already, and we didn't have any here in the program. So another colleague, Allison Rusco, who happens to be a section editor for A Difficult Diagnosis, if you're turning to the beginning of your JAPA, she and I talked about launching this kind of initiative. And then, you know, we really spread out a wide net to look for collaborators. We're really hoping that our students understand that healthcare is global, see how other people are practicing medicine, learning medicine, and how PAs are functioning in other parts of the world. So we're really hoping that we bring perspective and awareness and fresh ideas, hopefully, to our students, and hope that we can provide the same for our global partners, and let alone the academic and the scholarship opportunities between the faculty members. You know, the world just gets smaller and smaller.
And Ms. Gardner, as a PA that has practiced outside of the US, do you think beneficial for students if they plan to practice outside of the US? What are some things you may encourage students to kind of know if they, or anyone who's practicing but plan to practice in another country?
I think the global classrooms are really exceptional because one thing it does, it helps to introduce students to other cultures and other ways of life and other healthcare systems. And so one of the best things to do in order to be successful as a practitioner in another country is to start with trying to understand the culture and getting to know the people from that particular country. Because certainly it's going to be those folks that will help you be successful as a healthcare provider in other countries, because we often forget that the world extends beyond the United States and people do things differently. And we sometimes have a difficult time seeing and understanding the rationale for other ways of practicing. So one of the best ways to start to break into that is to have a global classroom. And this way you're able to meet students from other parts of the world and to talk to them and discuss the differences in healthcare. One of the things I strongly recommend anyone who's going to practice abroad, and I learned this myself, is to get a really good solid foundation of medicine in this country. So if you want to go abroad, you might want to look at really broadening your scope of practice here, such as in terms of either family medicine or internal medicine, because it's going to be the basic foundational skills that you're going to need to help you be successful abroad.
Thank you. And one of the things you touched upon is the healthcare system. So if you don't mind shedding some insight, what are some major differences between the healthcare system in Scotland versus here? What are maybe some challenges you face there or here that aren't, you know, in one country that's not in the other?
Well, one of the things I learned, because I must admit, when I went over there, I really felt that we do have a really good healthcare system when it in terms of quality of services. We are in a lot of places in our country, we're on the cutting edge of medicine, but we do have a problem with people having access to the system, access to good care, access to medications. And one thing I learned working abroad in Scotland, the National Health Service provides healthcare to everyone, regardless of their ability to pay. And so people have access to basic healthcare, which I think is very valuable and very important. People are able to get medications without charge. As we know here, people often struggle to get treatment, to get medicines without losing their homes, without losing their resources. So one of the things I learned to appreciate is what the term that we don't like to use here is socialized medicine. I did find some benefits of that working abroad and seeing people having access to care without the struggles of losing their homes, their property, their income, and so forth. So that's a big thing that I really, really noticed. Some of the other challenges and differences, though, is this. When you're providing care to large amounts of people, of course, that is costly. And so you may not always have access to the most recent treatments. You may not be on the cutting edge of medicine. And so, for example, some of the newer medications that we have here that are very, very costly, people over there may not have access to. And some of us, as people here, many people here don't have access to them. But there can be ways to obtain them in terms of some of the pharmaceutical companies have special programs for people, but still, again, the masses of people aren't able to access a lot of these newer medications, especially when you talk about cancer and the newer immunotherapy types of treatment. So over in Scotland and some of these countries that have socialized medicines, people may not be able to get those types of treatments, but still, they're able to get something. It may not be the newest thing, but they're able to access some type of care for their problems without having to worry about cost. And that's for everyone, not just certain groups of people, but everyone.
Now, Adrian, do you mind just maybe letting our listeners know what are some of the other countries that we've collaborated with in global classrooms that our students, different cultures our students have been able to be exposed to?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start off by saying we've been lucky enough, like I said, to collaborate with a physician associate program in Northern Ireland at Ulster University. And we're still looking for other PA collaborators. So if you're listening, email me. It's asb35@drexel.edu. We spoke to some physician assistant faculty in the Netherlands, and we're hoping something happens with that. We know that we've got amazing PA colleagues in Canada and all across England. That would be great too. So specifically here at Drexel, we've worked with the PA program in Ulster in Northern Ireland, but we've also been really grateful to make connections with a nursing program in Cameroon in Africa. And in fact, tomorrow, after the day after recording this, we're going to have a collaboration with Coventry University nursing students in England. So far, our students have interacted globally just in the past 6 months with nursing students in Cameroon, with PA students in Northern Ireland, and soon enough with nursing students in England. And the perspective that has been shared both ways in both the medical systems, the medical training programs and costs and salaries has been really eye-opening. I think, you know, we each do medicine in different ways. Everyone has things that they like about their healthcare system and things that they don't like. It's often a case of the grass seems greener on the other side of the fence. But I can say that in general, our international partners have been shocked by the cost of our healthcare, inability to access healthcare when it seems like we have so much, but also so many people can't access it. And even those that can, that it's such a high cost. The cost of our medical training programs is shocking. As anyone listening knows, you've come out of PA school with debt in most cases, but they're also often surprised at how much we get paid, right? So we come out with a lot of debt. We have really nice salaries. So, you know, if you're thinking maybe that you haven't been paid so well, we get paid really well. We don't always give back to the profession the way other professions give back. You know, so pros and cons. If you went to school in another country, you would come out with less student loans. But even there, oftentimes they pay more for their PA program than they have for their undergrad, which is really surprising. So less loans and then a lower salary. And then also, you know, we get to do different things here in the US than our international PA partners can do. It varies by country. I know the UK is making great strides, as we see in that article. Hopefully they're coming up for a vote soon to get some more. I'll say some more in the UK. And I think also we have to be careful when we are our American PAs going into countries that have newer professions than ours, that
we are watching and learning from them and letting them set up the PA profession in the way that works for them, instead of disturbing the gentle, precarious ground of a brand new profession. I mean, we're a new profession and there's almost 200,000 of us in the US. They're very new. And so it's exciting to think about traveling abroad and also know that we as Americans will be going into ecosystems that are younger than ours.
Yeah. And I think that's important, if I may add, to go in realizing that you're a new profession. We're new here, but even newer overseas. And so we have to go in gently and try to demonstrate what we're capable of doing in the way that we're working with that country, with the people in that country, not so much that we're going in, going to teach and show them how to do it, quote, the right way in the right group. Yeah. The other thing I want to touch on real quickly is salary. So I will say that I did not have the best salary living over in the UK, and I didn't go to Scotland for that reason. I went over really for the experience of submerging myself in another culture and also learning about other people and to see how I could fit into their healthcare system and what I could give to them and what they could learn from me. And so if you're going over to become wealthy, don't bother. I think you want to go over to really, the experience is worth more than any salary that you could ever get.
Mm-hmm. And then to wrap things up, you both mentioned this. How would you say the scope of practice is different from here versus working overseas? If that might be a culture shock to any PAs that might be interested.
I can start with that. Yeah, the scope of practice was quite different for me because number one, I was the first PA in my area in Scotland. And so they weren't sure how to utilize me. And so the way that they're trained, they have nurse practitioners that they kind of were comparing to the scope of practice of PAs, but their nurse practitioners are even different in the way that they're trained. They're trained in modules. And so they tried to fit me into the nurse practitioner module, but being the PA, the way that I was trained, I would not fit into that module. I was determined because otherwise they wouldn't really see how we work and how to utilize me. So it's important that you collaborate or link up with a doctor who is really familiar with how the practice works and so how the profession works. And I was lucky because my supervising physicians had traveled to America several times, many times, and observed how PAs worked. So I was able to really be utilized as a PA because they were familiar with our scope of practice. Whereas in a lot of other places, my colleagues that were there had a difficult time because they didn't really know how to utilize them.
Yeah, I'm sure our listeners will be quite knowledgeable now based on some of the insights that you've brought to the table. And I'm definitely very interested in the Global Insight series that's going to be in JAPA.
Yeah, I think they were two great articles that really shed a lot of light onto the current status. It's so great to have international PAs who, you know, it just seems so lovely. I can't wait to meet more and all of them, but I'm really excited about this series too, so that, you know, we can really continue to make our world smaller and continue to learn and grow with each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for this month's podcast.
All right. Thank you for having us.
Of course. Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed this month's episode, and thank you to our special guests, Dr. Adrian Banning and Professor Juanita Gardner. If you'd like to contact them, I'll be sure to have their information down in the podcast summary. And before you go, please be sure that you're, one, following JAPA on social media. Their Instagram handle is @JAAPAonline. And under the post for April's issue, let us know your thoughts about the topics we went over today. We'd love to hear your input. I look forward to what's in store for next month, especially since it'll be the first in-person AAPA conference. So that's something to maybe look forward to as a hint. But in the meantime, thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoyed.